Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's stand up for UEFA Champions League football. The draw will be held Monday for the knockout stage of the world's premier club competition. And for the first time, five English teams are among the last 16. Chelsea, Liverpool, Tottenham Hotspur, Manchester City, and Manchester United all qualified for the knockout phase, signaling a revival by English clubs after several years of underachievement since the Blues of Chelsea won the European title in 2012. Three Spanish clubs will also be in the draw at UEFA headquarters in Switzerland: Barcelona, Sevilla, and reigning European champion Real Madrid. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to Real's Portuguese star, Cristiano Ronaldo. The 32-year-old Ronaldo achieved yet another record Wednesday in Real's 3-2 victory over visiting Borussia Dortmund of Germany. Ronaldo netted a goal to become the first player to score in all six UEFA group stage matches. Overall, Cristiano Ronaldo led all scorers with 9 goals in the group phase, and he's one of the favorites to lift the Ballon d'Or trophy, given to the world's best footballer by France Football Magazine, later Thursday night in Paris. And speaking of Paris, the French club Paris Saint-Germain will also be in Monday's UEFA Champions League draw, as will the Italian clubs Roma and Juventus. Besiktas of Turkey, 5-time European champion Bayern Munich of Germany, they're also in the draw. Porto of Portugal. And let's give another sunny side of sports salute to Cameroonian striker Vincent Aboubakar, whose 2 first-half goals on Wednesday helped Porto beat Monaco 5-2 and grab a place in the last 16. The two other clubs to reach the 16-team knockout phase are Shakhtar Donetsk of Ukraine and Basel of Switzerland. In the knockout phase, teams play against each other on a home-and-away basis, except for the one-match final on May 26, 2018, in Kiev, Ukraine's capital. First-leg matches in the round of 16 will be played in February, and the return legs in March. Now let's go to Kenya, where Zanzibar won its second consecutive match on Thursday in the CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup football tournament. Zanzibar rallied to beat Tanzania 2-1 at Kenyatta Stadium in Machakos, about 60 kilometers southeast of the capital, Nairobi. The Taifa Stars of Tanzania took a 1-0 lead on a goal in the 29th minute by Hamid Mao Mkami. Kasim Suleiman equalized for Zanzibar in the 67th minute, and Ibrahim Hamad Halika got the game-winning goal in the 79th minute. Zanzibar now has the maximum 6 points from 2 matches in Group A. Turning to Group B, Burundi beat Ethiopia Thursday 4-1 in Kenya's western town of Kakamega. The Burundians now top the group with 4 points from 2 matches, while the Ethiopians have 3 points from 2 matches. This 39th edition of the CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup tournament is for teams that are members of CECAFA, the Council for East and Central Africa Football Associations. Libya and Zimbabwe were invited as guest teams for the competition, but Zimbabwe pulled out, citing security concerns. The top 2 teams in each group will advance to the CECAFA Cup semifinals, scheduled for December 14th and December 15th, and the final will be played on December 17th. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Just ahead, we'll shine the spotlight on a Spanish tennis star who had a great season in 2017. So please, keep on the sunny side.
Oh, keep on the sunny side. Always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day. It will brighten all the way. If you keep on the sunny side of life. Oh, keep on the sunny side.
Turning to tennis, Spanish star Rafael Nadal is ending 2017 as the world's top-ranked player after winning Grand Slam titles at the French Open and the U.S. Open. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2017, let's look back at Rafa's triumph at the U.S. Open in New York. And here's what he had to say after lifting the trophy.
There's no better way to finish the Grand Slam season for me. A very emotional season in all aspects. So very happy the way that I played, happy the way that I managed the pressure and the way that I was competing during the whole event. The competitive spirit had been there in a very positive way all the time.
In a very positive way, Spanish tennis star Rafael Nadal has won his 3rd U.S. Open singles title and 16th Grand Slam trophy overall in New York City. World number one Nadal cruised to a 6-3, 6-3, and 6-4 victory over the tall South African Kevin Anderson, a first-time Grand Slam finalist. In fact, let's give the 31-year-old Anderson a Sunny Side of Sports salute. Kevin is the first South African to reach a Grand Slam final in the modern open era of tennis, a period spanning almost 50 years. We'll hear from Kevin Anderson, but first, let's hear from 2017 U.S. Open champion Rafa Nadal. Rafa and longtime rival Roger Federer of Switzerland dominated the major tournaments this year. Federer won the Australian Open and Wimbledon, while Nadal captured the French Open and the U.S. Open. At the post-match news conference in New York, Rafa was asked if he's surprised he and Federer won 2 major tournaments apiece in 2017.
Of course, I am surprised. I was surprised in January. Now I am not that much surprised, you know. After the first 2-3 months of the season, of course, you see that I am playing well, and if I am playing well on clay, I'm normally going to have my chances. And, of course, he was playing great, so, of course, he will have his chances on grass and on hard later, that like he had here. Yeah, of course, it's a surprise some time ago, now a little bit less. And there is just 2 things that probably we share, that is passion for what we are doing, passion for tennis, passion for the competition, and the spirit of improvement all the time.
Rafa talks about the spirit of improvement. Well, the South African Kevin Anderson showed some big improvement at the U.S. Open in reaching his first Grand Slam final. Anderson says the New York event was a great learning experience for him.
Yeah, there's definitely a few emotions and experiences I'm going to take from this, you know, a whole 2 weeks. I mean, obviously very pleased of making my way through to the finals and having that experience. I mean, you know, a few players, you know, get that chance. It's very tough, and you know, to step out on court against Rafa tonight is, you know, I learned a lot of lessons. It was a difficult match, you know, up against somebody who's been on that stage over 20 times before, and it's, you know, definitely a few things I needed to have done better. Obviously, I had my work cut out for me, but I think overall, obviously, it's been, you know, very, very positive 2 weeks for me.
Meanwhile, it was also a very, very positive 2 weeks for Sloane Stephens, who won her first major tennis trophy in an All-American women's singles final. Stephens beat Madison Keys 6-3 and 6-love. Both Stephens and Keys were playing in their first Grand Slam final, and Sloane talked about that during the post-match news conference.
I was extremely nervous before I went on the court. My coach was like, just breathe, take deep breaths, you know, like you'll be fine. And once I got out there, I felt a lot better. But I knew, nervous or not, her being nervous, me being nervous, we're going to have to compete no matter what. We're going to have to play. And I was just fortunate enough to be able to, you know, hold it together a little bit longer. And I just went out and compete and ran after every ball. And that's all I focused on.
After match point, Sloane Stephens and her good friend Madison Keys gave each other a long hug. Keys talks about the emotional moment.
I think, you know, we have known each other for so long and we've been through so much that we wanted to share that moment with each other. To be able to share my first slam experience with a really close friend when it's also her first slam is a really special moment. And again, if there's no one else in the world that would have meant as much as it did.
Madison Keys talking about her really close friend, Sloane Stephens, the 2017 U.S. Open women's singles champion. The U.S. Tennis Association says about 700,000 people attended matches during the last Grand Slam event of the year. One celebrity who has been courtside for more than a few U.S. Open matches in recent years is the American rapper and businessman Jay-Z. And let's face it, VOA sports fans, Jay-Z knows his way around New York.
That Brooklyn, now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to the Narrow, but I'll be hood forever, I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere, yeah, they love me everywhere, I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway, pulled me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street, catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry, cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas, me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Big. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my ties. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely from
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. During Wednesday's show, VOA's Andrew Palcheski talked about an awards ceremony organized by Sports Illustrated magazine in New York City. One of the awards went to Cameroonian basketball player Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers. The 23-year-old from Yaoundé received the Sports Illustrated Rising Star of the Year Award. And if you go to the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page, The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see a photo of Joel Embiid at the awards ceremony, looking quite dashing on the red carpet. More National Basketball Association news. The Cleveland Cavaliers have tied a club record with their 13th consecutive victory. The Cavaliers beat the visiting Sacramento Kings Wednesday night 101-95, with superstar LeBron James once again leading the way for Cleveland. LeBron connected on a three-point shot with 15 seconds left in the game. He finished with 32 points and 11 rebounds. Another player with African ties, Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks, celebrated his 23rd birthday Wednesday in victorious fashion. Antetokounmpo had 25 points and 9 rebounds, and the Bucks beat the visiting Detroit Pistons 104-100. It was Milwaukee's fourth victory in the past 5 games. And another young NBA player with African ties, Victor Oladipo, scored 27 points on Wednesday night to help lead the Indiana Pacers to a 98-96 victory over the Chicago Bulls. Victor's mother is from Nigeria, and his father is from Sierra Leone. Joining us once again on the show is the aforementioned Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. That's what we call a $10 word, aforementioned. I like that very much. Thank you.
Well, what is trending on this Thursday?
Well, speaking about $10, let's talk money and let's talk numbers. That's our theme today, because in sports, you know, numbers are a big part, whether it's a score or salary or stats, all based around numbers. So today we have four stories that are based around numbers, starting with a big number, $200 million, as in $200 million, National Football League Commissioner Roger Goodell has extended his contract as the head of the NFL for 5 years, and he'll reportedly make in that 5 years up to $200 million.
Wow.
A massive payday for Roger Goodell, and one that is not sitting well with some of the league's players. They're actually speaking out on social media about this. You have Mike Mitchell, who plays with the Pittsburgh Steelers, tweeting out #FireGoodell, #MakeFootballFootballAgain. Leroy Butler, a retired footballer who played with the Green Bay Packers, wrote that it's a shame that the commissioner gets $40 million a year, but players are still waiting on settlements from concussions. Of course, that's been a big problem during Goodell's tenure.
Very critical.
And Cameron Jordan of the New Orleans Saints questioned if Goodell had to fight for guaranteed money. And then he said, oh, well, football players have to, so why doesn't he have to make that same fight? Fans are not having it either. Many say, echoing the players, that with the national anthem protests, the questions about player health and safety, and declining NFL ratings, Goodell shouldn't be rewarded, but should be fired. He's, as one person put it, failing upwards. Even though he has all of these blemishes on his tenure as NFL commissioner, he is getting rewarded for that.
One thing maybe for our VOA listeners, Andrew, it's basically the owners who are paying Goodell. Is that right?
Yeah, the owners decide who the commissioner is. There's been some back and forth, actually, in the media about Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and he and Goodell have been clashing over the national anthem protests. But I guess they have cleared the way now for Goodell to remain on board and to collect a hefty paycheck. And as one person put it on social media, just to put it in context, Goodell will make $200 million in 5 years. Tom Brady, who's one of the greatest quarterbacks of the game, arguably one of the greatest players, five-time Super Bowl champion, has made $197 million in his entire football career.
Wow.
So that gives you some sense of the context of where they're saying this is not deserving for Roger Goodell. They said that he shouldn't be making all that money.
Big money, any way you look at it, Andrew. What other money-making trends are out there on this Thursday?
Well, a big moneymaker, of course, is the Olympics. And another number in our series of numbers is 50, as in 50 miles between Pyeongchang, South Korea, which is where the games are set to be held, and the border with North Korea. Now, that short distance, just 50 miles, is causing concern for U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley.
Of course, the United States and North Korea have been involved in a back and forth over nuclear weapons for months. And on Wednesday, Haley said that those tensions, coupled with how close the Olympics are to North Korea, could mean that the U.S. might not participate in the Games. Mm. She told a reporter that it was an open question whether or not the U.S. would attend the Games. Now, fans are questioning Haley's comments. Now, why would the U.S. not participate when hundreds of thousands of Americans live in South Korea? There are a lot of servicemen and women who are stationed in South Korea. Athletes in particular were very shocked and angered by these comments, especially as many of the athletes noted on social media. And as we talked about yesterday, Russia is banned from participating in the Games. So imagine if Russia and the United States, two of the big powerhouses of the Winter Olympics, were not involved. It would leave a very big gap in the Games. You know, the potential for not attending the Olympics seems very far-fetched. And Nikki Haley did walk back those comments saying, it's an open question, but we'll have to see. But the best thing for these athletes to do would be to go to the Games and participate on the world stage. But as we talked about with the World Cup in 2018 and moving that out of Russia, there are so many logistical concerns.
Right.
People who have paid to travel there, TV rights, athletes who have been training for months, if not years, for this moment. So I don't think that it's going to happen. But those comments getting a lot of attention. As we see, sometimes the diplomatic and sports worlds can cross paths, and this was one of those cases.
Still with the Winter Olympics, Andrew, a couple of sidebar stories. One, that ticket sales have not been exactly red hot for the Winter Games. But the other heat aspect is they say this could be one of the coldest Winter Olympics in history based on forecasts. So I guess the cold, if it's really cold, I would think that would be good for some of the events.
I would think so. I know that in the past for Winter Olympics, they've held them in cities where it's been quite warm. I think in Sochi, that was one of the problems. They had to create a lot of artificial snow for some of the events, for skiing and the like. So that, I think, will be welcomed by organizers, that they won't have to create so much artificial weather. The weather will cooperate for them.
Well, what other money signs are out there on this Thursday, Andrew?
Well, big number 23, as in 23 Grand Slam tennis titles. That's how many titles Serena Williams has right now, and she has made countless millions of dollars from those titles. The most, in fact, of any player, man or woman, in the Open era. But Serena has her sights set on another number, 24, and it's a number she hopes to hit next month, because after being out of tennis for the past 7 months, having her first child, it's being reported that Serena Williams is likely to make her return at the Australian Open in January. Craig Tiley, who is the Australian Open tournament director, told the Herald Sun newspaper in Australia that Serena's got her visa, she's entered, she's practicing, and she's probably going to find a bit more space for a bigger entourage. Of course, when you have a child, you got to bring all the stuff along with the child. No confirmation yet from Serena's team or Serena herself, but fans online are saying that if she does indeed enter the tournament, and they hope she does, they expect her to win number 24. No pressure, right? Your first tournament back after having a child, and everybody expects you to win the whole thing.
And I think her older sister will probably also be down under in Melbourne,
yeah,
Venus Williams.
Talk about a number, you know, 37, 38 years old, and Venus is still playing lights out tennis. She's in the top five of women, even in that age where she, by all accounts, should be retired, but she's still playing quite well.
And still with the Williams sisters, Andrew, I recently made my first visit to the African American History Museum right here in Washington. And for our listeners, they have a sports section at the museum located not too far from our VOA headquarters. I really encourage you to check it out. There is a statue of Venus and Serena in the sports exhibit, holding up their rackets, and it's a nice honor for the Williams sisters.
Yeah, I'd say a well-deserved honor for what they've done for tennis and just sports generally as women, and as African-American women in particular. You look back at their story starting out in the neighborhood of Compton outside of Los Angeles, a very poor neighborhood, and look where they are today. Amazing.
Amazing indeed. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the December 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Dan Crafton. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The 2 weeks between International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, observed on November 25th, and Human Rights Day, celebrated on December 10th, are dedicated to 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, 16 days of campaigning around the world to challenge and raise awareness of gender-based violence, and mobilizing people everywhere to bring about change. Gender-based violence is directed against individuals because of their actual or perceived biological sex or gender identity. It may be, and at times is, aimed at boys and men. But because most cultures confer lower social status on females, thereby creating an unequal power dynamic, women and girls are more likely than men and boys to be sexually or physically assaulted. Gender-based violence crosses every social and economic class, ethnicity, race, religion, and education level, and transcends international borders. It is perpetuated by the failure of governments and societies to recognize and value the human rights of women and girls, even though such discrimination causes harm to society as a whole. We know that violence against women and girls undermines global peace and security, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. It weakens the social fabric that binds families and communities together and prevents countries from achieving social stability and economic development. International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women and the accompanying 16 days of activism against gender-based violence are observed by the international community in order to shine a light on this scourge. We continue to recognize that violence against women remains a persistent threat and an obstacle to achieving women's equality. The United States is especially alarmed by violent extremist groups' use of violence against women as a tactic of terror to suppress women, recruit terrorists, and stigmatize communities. We denounce terrorist organizations' use of forced conscription, sexual exploitation, and abuse, including sex trafficking of women and girls, said Secretary of State Tillerson. The United States will never waver in its support for women's equality. In partnership with governments, international organizations, and civil society around the world, we will continue to work to end violence against women and girls globally and to ensure that women and girls have equal rights and opportunities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share the ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.